And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this evening we are blessed with having Albert Clayton Golden, the author of You're Not Who You Think You Are. He is the founder and director of Sedona, Arizona's popular alternative therapy program, the Sedona Intensive. And he began his career with astrology. So welcome, Albert. Let's ask the question. So you're not who you think you are. Then who are you?
The best way that I can put it is that we are androgynes who come back to the planet Earth and choose a sex, either male or female, as a way to work off the karmic past. And I say in the books that I write that Earth is a reform school. I also like to use the Joseph Campbell creativity. I say, I never really got well until I could really turn away from the false world, including the false me that people told me I was. But using the creativity of Joseph Campbell, I mean, I really have been able to rewrite my script. That's a cap, ball, a baseball cap I wear. It says rewrite your script. So he says that, you know, God in his humanity and compassion, when Lucifer said, I want to be God, he said, nope, I like the big room with the spa shower and whatever. And as Lucifer, the fallen angel, left, taking with him all of us, God created the earth as a reform school. And it was a place where if man could ever reach the center of his own universe, he could return to paradise, which is like where the soul is. I mean, I think heaven's within each of us. Mm-hmm. So it really is a journey of facing what really isn't true. And I find it very interesting. I don't know whether you got the news, but my last book, You're Not Who You Think You Are, was selected as the best spiritual book of the San Francisco book festival.
Nice.
And they gave the awards out Friday. I was unable to go because of work. But they must have seen something in that, because the letter we got said, if anything ever reflected where we were, and this was for the year 2008 of the books in that year,
mm-hmm.
that if anything or any book or any ism addressed what we went through, it was this book, You're Not Who You Think You Are, because the banks, the stock market, no one and nothing was who and what we thought it was. So, I mean, I just find it, you know, it's kind of synchronistic. I think every so often each of us shows up at the right time, inspired to say or to write something that touches a lot of people, and that's exactly what happened with that book.
Well, it certainly is a great book in talking about a lot of different ways and a lot of different steps that people can take to assist them on this journey, this path called life. I am, you know, very honored to talk to you about that. Let's start with, and I know a lot of the book here is your journey, but let's start with, you know, how did you get to here?
To this place to be able to write this book?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to dip back into, you know, my younger life.
Mm-hmm.
I always call it my other incarnation. I grew up in a very Christian family, and I said my prayers and learned the scriptures and even became a ministerial student.
Mm-hmm.
What was wrong with all of that is that when I talk with my clients or I lecture or do media like today, I say, you know, I was living in a world of one. You know, I said, I know that I don't believe all of this, and why am I keep doing this? And of course, like the Pavlovian dog, you know, I came from a family that said never let him see you sweat before that commercial did 40 years later. And so that's the way that I live. But then enter alcohol. You know, I have to say to people that sometimes the things that you think destroy you have really come to cut the umbilical cord to a life that doesn't serve you. So I found booze, and I alcoholically drank for 20 years. But and it's only God's time. You mentioned astrology. I like to tell people that I use planets and angulation like Carl Jung did. You know, Jungian psychology is my brand, and that's the kind of sermon that I preach to my clients. And that's because there's nothing like, and Carl Jung discovered this, and because of the times in which he lived, a lot of that was suppressed because, you know, people translate his books, but people that know German swear that they were translated poorly, but also they left out a lot of the astrology. So that's neither here nor there. I know that he wouldn't see a patient without it. But it was when I was still drinking at the age of 25 that a woman did my chart and absolutely rang every bell, you know, in my repertoire. And she said to me right off the bat, "Oh, you're a drunk, but you won't sober up till you're 40, 41. And I got sober at 41.
Wow.
But she did identify me enough to tell me the reason that you flounder and the reason you're overeducated is that that's not what you're to do. You are to take upon yourself the healing role where they get to stay as sick as they want to, like you did, for 20 years or more. And then when they're ready, you know, with the old thing, when the teacher's ready, the student appears. So that woman, that astrologer, when I was 25, taught me how to do astrology, and in 5 weeks I could do it. Hopefully, I do it better today. But at the time, I didn't realize that while drinking, I would oftentimes help other people more than I was able to help myself. Because I can tell you, for those who are listening, if you have an addiction or a compulsion, and we could name them, they're about 5,000, then you had better step out of line and tend to that. Because I can tell you, from the moment I got sober, you know I'm sober almost 30 years, and from the time I got sober, I began to discover who I really was, because those people in those 12-step meetings are so sweet, and let me tell you why they are. Because they have to give it away to keep it. I think that's a brilliant line. And so I just did what I was told, and when I was 2 years sober, I founded the Sedona Intensive because the voice of intuition told me to do it. And so now we'll start in October, our 28th year. But it's only because I do what I'm told to do. I mean, I was on a big show this week, and the woman said, "Okay, you're known to be tough and tell the truth and whatever. Just tell all these people listening and looking, how do you do what you do?" And I looked at her and I said, "Honey, I don't have a clue." She nearly dropped her microphone, and she said, "What do you mean you don't know?" I said, "Okay, I'm going to try you on for size," just as if we were two people in my living room. And I said, I open my mouth, and because I pray, meditate, journal, and I make amends quickly when I'm at fault, and I try to be less of a materialist than I learned to be through the years, then God can speak through the microphone called my throat, my voice box. I mean, they lit up the lights on those phones because I said, "Listen, I said, look what you're doing." I said, "How much fun is that?" I said, "You know, people, the car comes for you and you get the best seats in restaurants." I said, "I'm a little guy and they don't know my face or my name, and I just have to be real nice because I probably get your seat when you're not in the restaurant." But the truth of the matter is that when you think that you know, you don't know.
Mm.
See, you know, I've done Oprah Winfrey. I think what's kind of funny about her is that she keeps looking under every rock to try to say what's real and what isn't. And now she's really caught on the right brain is the brain of, you know, the 2012 consciousness, the consciousness shift, which I think is nonsense. You know, you immediately take and leave behind all left brain people. Guess where I am? I'm in the middle. I mean, that's the only way to live, in the middle. So, I know I'm talking too long, but you asked
that's
me a
okay.
question. And that's how I got to where I am today.
Beautiful. You talk about having a touchstone and how important that was in your life.
Yes, and you know, he's the eminent and venerated Swami Swahananda, who's what I call the Pope of the Vedanta Society of Southern California. And the truth of the matter is, it kind of runs California and New York, but Vedanta is very strange but brilliant. They say all paths that lead to God are right paths. So, after a few months of knowing Swami, you know, I met him because he asked me to do his chart, and I thought, well, how crazy is he? When I got there, I thought he was the most incredible human being I'd ever met. And, you know, I'm a past life person. I believe maybe that I know Laurie Huston more than I know you now from another life. So he was so unbelievably nice, and he said to me when I was done, he says, Albert, I later became Ramapriya because 3 months later he initiated me, and I've been a Vedantist for 26 years. So he says, Albert, sometimes it's interesting when people know nothing and say a lot. He said, today you came in for 1 hour on the minute, and you said a lifetime. And I thank you, and he bowed like they do in India. And I left. Brilliant man, but he became my touchstone. So as I began to put together the stages of change and how to go from being inauthentic to authentic, I used him. I ran these ideas by him. But Swami is brilliant to the degree that he answers a question with a question. For instance, I don't know whether you're that familiar, but, you know, the devotees take their dust and nonsense like that. So I hug him, and I kiss him on both cheeks. I, you know, try to make him think he's French. So this devotee came running up, and he said, Swami, why is this man so bold as to hug you? He says, it is his character. He said, but I take your dust. He says, that's your character. He said, Swami, you need to know something. He says, Albert says, that he thought he was the reincarnation of Ramakrishna, which is like our Jesus. He says, I think he is. He says, no. He says, he doesn't seem that holy. He says, perhaps you need to change what holy looks like to you. But he's a brilliant man. He's also somebody, when he's had enough of you, he'll say, be gone. I need to meditate, because the body, you know, the death-like state of meditation draws near. So, but that's why he became my touchstone, because Swami is absolutely brilliant. And he's absolutely the shortest, briefest genius that I've ever known, ever, anywhere.
Amen. You also talk, and you don't mention it very much, but I always like to bring it up whenever I see it, because I think, you know, there really is a lot of this going on, which is, you talk about how the world is filled with powder puff spirituality and how we need to learn discernment.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You know, I think I'll now send you something as a gift. When people pick up on what I think to be the healing waters of a chapter or a book, I let them know it, and I'll tell you, you picked it up. I will absolutely go on record on the 11th of May, 2009, on the Laura Huston Show, and I'll say this. Those that seem like they're the big pieces of stuff in the pantheon of writers, teachers, leaders, that have become bigger than their message, run for the exit. I will absolutely tell you that there's something about truth that is extremely anonymous. and it does not have anybody's footprints or fingerprints on it. And what it is the axiom of God. And oftentimes God, you know, I say in the book, he's a clown. And God says, oh, look at that one down there. I'm going to see how, what an idiot he or she'll be by letting them have a 2 million seller book. Mm. You know, it may not have anything in it except they were chosen by God. You know, people ask me all the time, why does this book sell 3 million copies? So, you know, my dearest friend is James Redfield, 40 million internationally for the Sellers in Prophecy. And I'll say only God knows. People are really taken back when you don't try to act like one of those in that chapter, that paragraph, that try to come up with everything. You know, the kiss of death is to do Larry King when, you know, they just absolutely insist that you lie, make it up, or say something that razzle dazzles. You know, once I was on one of the national shows, and the woman asked me a question. I said, can I get back to you? And in the middle of somebody else, I said, excuse me. She said, yes. I said, I got the answer. Well, later, you know, the producer said, how did you do that? And I said, well, I do it because that's what I do. Yeah. I do it with my clients. I mean, there's a guy here now, and I said, you're 22 years old, and I'm 71. What in the hell am I doing with you? Because you're sweeter than lemon meringue pie, and I said, and kinder than St. Francis. Aww. He said, because my dad said I needed to stop smoking dough. I said, bingo, now I know why you're here, and we had a great session. But I love the fact that you picked up on that, because if people are not aware, let me ring their buzzer today. We're in an incredible time of shift, and the shift is this. If you don't quit trying to take the chips called God and make a zillion dollars off of it and quit trying to stick your nose in the air because you think you're better than whomever, you're going to have a real rude awakening. There are a lot of people in the spiritual movement that have fallen like flies, and the reason they do, there's a very famous one. She talks about it herself, Terry Cole Whitaker, that she had some difficulty, and now she's come back and better. But the truth of the matter is, you better be very careful. The minute you see somebody that only goes on certain shows that can guarantee the demographics and guarantee so many sales and whatever, you want to just fold the tents and leave because that person is nonsense. What we really are here for, Laurie, is we are here to tell the truth. And I tell the truth. And when I stand up to speak today, whether it's 50 people or 5,000, I start the same way. I'm really delighted to still be standing, you know, with the life I've lived. And if you read my books or you play some tapes, you'll know that it hasn't always been Sunday school squeaky clean. But if I owe anybody in the audience any money for my drinking days and I make my business partner stand up, I say, Scott, if there's anything left, can you pay them if they can prove it? And the audience roars, and I've got them in my back pocket. As long as I continue to tell the truth, till I'm ready to say, Om Tat Sat Om, and sit down.
You're great.
Well, I don't know. You know what? I'll tell you what I am. Mm. I have a new puppy. He's 7 months old. Oh. And just this morning, he taught me with a surprise because I didn't get him out quickly enough. But he's teaching me more than I've ever taught anyone because he is like a child that I never had. Mm. And so, you know, I just cleaned up after him and took him out on a walk. But anyway, next.
So we create the life we deserve when we can let go of the world of illusion.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, that's very interesting because I want to tell you something. I lived in the greater but more destructive drinking in Hancock Park in Los Angeles. And I had Hollywood at my hands. I mean, I was, everybody says the stars to this. Well, I would no more say that. I'm about to go back to Los Angeles and market some agents because actors and writers and producers are drunks and drug addicts. But I don't say that anywhere in the letter. It sounds like I'm a newcomer. They might think I'm 30 or 35. But I used to be. I mean, that's the way they build me. And the truth of the matter is, it wasn't who I really was, because I thought if I get to Mulholland and go to Jack Nicholson's, oh, my God, I'll probably drop dead of excitement. Well, isn't that something? That's what movie stars do in movies. They are revealing and mirroring the conditions of the planet Earth, even when it's a comedy, a tragedy, or dumb nuts. It's all about us. And so what I didn't realize was that until I become who God created me to be and accept the assignment and do it, that I'm the biggest phony actor out there. So I had to one day go into one of those meetings and say, my name is Albert, and I'm an alcoholic. And that's how the true me began to emerge from the ruin of who I wasn't and the mess it caused.
So you talk about becoming authentic, and it's about stop trying to control everything because God will lead the way.
And that's very, very true. I mean, the truth of the matter is somehow you and I got together today. But I went on your website, and I looked at it, and I thought, what a nice lady. And I said, giving so many of those non-unknowns a chance who probably are the quiet masters, you know, I love what the Dalai Lama said the other day. He said, you know, it's so interesting. His people always want to bow and scrape to me. And he said, oh, brother, I want to say, can I tell you my troubles? I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, authenticity is so important in these times where we wear so many masks and we try and hide ourselves from who we are. And as you say, we're not who we think we are. So, you know, becoming authentic is you know, for a lot of people, challenging and not even something that they want to look at.
Let me give you one big piece, or let me tell this to your audience. I think a big part of my work, and you're not who you think you are, and quite frankly, I've heard this from psychiatrists, traditional psychologists, to alternative healers. The part of my book that really grabs people is the integration of the divided self, the shadow, the male within the woman and the feminine within the masculine. That's the part that I think represents the dark side. It's the deceiver. It's the part of ourselves that, for instance, you know, don't you think a lot of men that say women are still second-class citizens and they're judges in courts of law in this country? That, I mean, I have a client in Oregon, and the judge even told her in chambers, I don't give as much to women because men run the show. Can you believe that?
Wow.
But if you don't get in touch with and activate your shadow self, your invisible partner, you will never be authentic. And the only people that I know are women who are very self-empowered, who do not look for a man to complete them, and they can be as happy with or without a husband or a lover as they are unto themselves. And the same for a man. And just like this 22-year-old, he said the reason that I got my dad to send me was I read the chapter about, the title chapter is about sexual integration. And he said, Albert, I have felt since I was 5 years old very strong feminine energy inside myself But he said, I knew I wasn't gay. He said, you know, I've never even been hit on before, but I am very soft, very gentle. All the things that have been attributed to women, I have inside me, and I couldn't wait to get here. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
22 years old, and there are men and women dying now at 90 and 95 who do not believe the union work that does the shadow of the male within the woman and the feminine within the man. So that I will tell you. I will say it from the highest hill on any show that I go on, any book that I write, or any podium that I speak before, that you must integrate the shadow self or you will never be authentic.
It's very powerful. Very powerful. You also mentioned the three selves, and I think this kind of goes in connection with that, but, you know, the lower self, which is the ego, the middle self, which I'd love to talk about because I try and figure out how that fits in, but I think I'm getting it, and then the higher self, which is God, which is everybody has within us, and we you know, there are lots of people out there that says, you know, you have to get rid of the ego, and, you know, I'm kind of...
No, you embrace it. Remember
exactly.
I did that exercise?
Exactly.
In the book? Listen, I had a dollar for everybody that went through my program that said that I have got to kill the ego. Mm-hmm. Do you have any poison? And I tell them, no, but I know you have two open arms, and I want you to embrace it. And that is the linchpin of going from the divided self to be able to embrace the shadow, because within a man it's his feminine that the shadow, that the dark side, the ego, uses, and it's the male energy within the woman. Why do you think that they're, I mean, that crazy woman, they made a movie about her monster where, you know, her male side drove her to kill people. Well, it was all alcohol and craziness. Same thing for men. You know, O.J. Simpson, you know, his feminine side is so in control of him that if he ever gets that together, he might be able to confess and make amends before he dies. But you will never, ever, ever be whole until you integrate the shadow and you ask about the middle self, which I'll segue to. The middle self is the one that's capable of hearing the voice of God,
okay,
the still small voice, which is the spokesperson of God within each of us. It's capable of hearing that one, and it's also... you know, that old Flip Wilson thing, the devil made me do it. Well, the middle self is the mediator. The middle self can listen to the ego and can bring it to the middle and take it to God. Now, I'm going to give you this because I know you've read every word of the book, and it heartens me. It makes me want to do your show once a week because, I mean, a lot of people... Thank God I know how to go on, but a lot of people haven't read it. I'm going to give them a simple thing, which they'll thank you for the rest of your life for letting me say this. The middle self must turn to the ego and say, ego, are you a devil who chases me or an angel who has come to help me?
Hmm.
And in that moment, by natural law, I can give people a lot of natural law, including the law of attraction, which is no secret, which is the Alabama hillbilly way of saying what the secret was about, or the law of attraction is you get what you deserve. So when you have that to the ego, in that moment, the ego dies and becomes reborn. It becomes Laura Huston, Albert Golden, precious children of God. And I will tell you, I have seen the devil incarnate show up at my table. And when I, about the third day, and I say, the ego gets up earlier than you do, or the high self, so you've got to say it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you can mentally say it. They absolutely break through like the devil cutting off its horns and its tail and redeeming itself and going back to God. So it's that part of us, it's the open-minded part, the middle self, that can listen to both sides. And here's how you mediate where those of us still on the earth plane can say we are in the higher consciousness journey. And that is, the middle self says, listen, I will never be perfect as long as I am surrounded by and imbued by and under the lash of this earth, because there's so much negative on this earth, but I will do the best I can with what I've got left. And then the still small voice says, why don't you follow what we gave Albert? And what we gave Albert was that if you say, are you a devil who chases me or an angel has come to help me, in that moment you make a shift and you become precious child of God and you're reunited with God. I know that sounds kind of silly, but it didn't sound nearly as silly as putting all our money in the stock market and losing half of our income. But of course, we deserve that because that was our dark side trying to hoodwink us into thinking that money, property, and prestige was our God. And boy, are a lot of people turning inward now, because in many ways, people are done with the folly of the money machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the shadow side. And what are the qualities that we can recognize to help us understand? So if we're a male and we have, you know, our shadow is the female, what are the qualities that help?
Okay. The qualities of the feminine when she is made, could we talk about the positive side?
Both, yeah.
Okay, because I want to let people know that, listen, the shadow is deadly. And I'm telling you, it does drive people to murder. I can tell you, as God is my witness, more than anything, the shadow is at the bottom of more malfeasance than you can imagine. But a positive attribute for a man is when a man says to his wife, you know, Jeanette, I really know how you feel. And she says, but how can you know you're a man? He says, yeah, but I've done a lot of study, and I realize that I have a shadow. And I realize that for years, I transferred it onto my mother, my sisters, and girls that I dated. And yet, you're such a strong woman, and your shadow has convinced you that you don't need to take my chauvinism. So I've had to turn inward, and I have embraced my feminine side, and that's the reason that I remember your birthday, and I plan surprises, and it's not any holiday, but sometime I write you a poem, and I send it in the mail when I'm out of town. Those are the things that are quite feminine. By the way, you know that Rajneesh, you know, the one that they called Osho at his death, that bought all those Rolls Royces, listen, he was a genius and a high master. And Rajneesh said in a book once that only a woman or the feminine part of a man knows how to love. So the gentility, the creativity, is where the feminine is. But my God, how many women do we know that act like truck drivers? I mean, there are women that say, God, I'm going to climb my way right up, you know, climb the ladder with my high heels and pearls and whatever. And I tell them, honey, you better dress down for the climb, because, you know, you're going to schvitz a little bit. So the thing is, it's when the positive quality is integrated. Let me tell you how a woman uses her shadow.
Mm-hmm.
A man walks out on her, and I'm kind of talking about my mother, Maggie, who is dead but not forgotten, and I only use the word dead because She's dead to the planet Earth. She lives on. But man walks out and a woman with six kids. She takes the money she's got left and goes to business school. And at her retirement at the age of 65, she was a part owner and secretary treasurer. And I mean, she never, I never really realized how my mother knew to do this. And a guy would say, God, you'd be lucky if a guy like me to ask you out. She said, let me tell you something. I was married to the best-looking, best-lover reprobate on the planet Earth, and anything else would be falling stars. So my mother really didn't date till she was about 60, died at 80. Boy, did my mother know about her male side, because it took her from victim to winner. And I'm not saying she was perfect. I had a lot about her that I didn't like, and she didn't about me, but those are the ways that you use the shadow, and that you use it very effectively to be a whole and authentic person.
You talk in the book about how Earth is reform school, and you know we're all on an evolutionary path to soul growth. Talk a little bit about like what is happening 2012, like because you briefly go into it, but you know it seems that there's some. I mean, we all talk about it, but you do also talk that you know there's going to be lots of changes. And what does that mean for you, or what does it look like these days for you?
Well, the way it looks like is what it looks like. I mean, I don't think that anybody that's got half a brain left really thinks that we're where we were even 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That's part of the shift. I mean, God has to say, hey, let's do a little rock and roll. Y'all like the fast lane down there? You want those cars to go faster and faster, whatever? Why don't we see what would happen when we pull the plug on all the nonsense? And that's what happened, because the planets moved. Excuse me. Pluto went into Capricorn in January of 2008, and within minutes, everything began to fall. Pluto in Capricorn says death and rebirth. And, you know, Pluto is the ruler of Scorpio, and everybody knows that that's a death and rebirth sign. So I don't think that there's any doubt that things are going in a faster than the speed of light consciousness shift. Now, I will tell you, so that people will understand this, I don't think you have to see an astrologer to necessarily know who you are, nor do you have to take all those crazy courses that, you know, something comes out and everybody tries to market it to death. I lived in Sedona. I've lived here 27 years for the Harmonic Convergence of 1987. And somebody said to me on the radio the other day, what was that all about? I said, nothing. Much ado about nothing. And I said, now that I've gotten your attention, men started wearing color, started doing whatever they eventually called them, metrosexuals or whatever. But I said, Mama said she's going to take her world back. And that's why the feminine within men began to be so much more pronounced. But I think it's very interesting that 2012 is not about knowing what the Mayans were saying. What it is that the Mayan calendar and that consciousness is within each of us, as is their birth chart. Do you know the Kabbalah? You know, after I was at this forever, I started taking Kabbalah from a rabbi, and he read my books, and he said, well, we're just going to do a refresher course, because you've probably been a Kabbalist, and we're going to help you remember. You know, I always say in all my books, we don't learn anything, we remember.
Exactly.
We do recall, if we can move away all the craziness that separates us from who we are and what the truth is, like money, property, prestige, the Baptist Church, the United States government, Iraq, Iran, all of them, and science. They don't know Jack Daniels about anything, and yet we depend upon science, except I don't. You know, when Joseph Campbell told me that my creative imagination, once I move away from obsessions and compulsions and addictions, then the creative me could rebuild my world. So I'm saying that I don't think that you need to know anything other than where we are, because this is what I'm going to tell you. More and more and more people are going to turn inside. They're going to quit lifting up a minister or a big piece of stuff that sold several million copies or Oprah Winfrey or yada yada. They're going to quit worshiping at those thrones of self-importance, and they're going to say, nobody has to tell me what book to read, what prayer to pray, what dogma, what dicta, because it's all about God within me. There is no search other than the one inside. You know, I say this in the book, you know, that old Sufi story, where to put God. If we put him in the mountain, man will climb there. Put him in the ocean, man will dive there. Put him inside of man, he'll never think to look there. But that's really, listen to me, I'm not trying to denigrate anyone, because a lot of these people that I am generally and anonymously naming, they will eventually give up the fight and they will go inside rather than trying to convince other people. And that's a very, crazy game to get into. I work with a lot of movie people in Wall Street, a royalty, very famous people. That Sedona Intensive program of mine is more popular now than it's ever been. And you know what? I tell them, take off that coat of arms and take off that Oscar you just won. Get out of that jock strap and those football pads and whatever, because we've got an alien that we need to deal with. And the alien is the overlay from your inauthentic self. It's all the dogma, dicta, everything that the currency told you to be. If you don't have this hairdo, if you don't live here, if you don't have that, you're nothing. Why do you think God's laughing so loud? That's where the earthquakes are coming from. Because people, of all the nonsense, when the president's wife wears something to the inauguration, 7 million women buy the dress 2 weeks later. Nonsense. Utter nonsense. That's the kind of thing that's going to shift. I can tell you that.
In your chapter called Out of the Darkness, you talk about, you know, you have to receive the light, you need to share it.
That's true.
The light comes to us through the power of laughter, which I love, because I think that's, you know, we forget, we make this so serious, and, you know, it's never going to come from our seriousness or our mind or
but
getting...
But, Laurie, don't you think that that's why you find me kind of amusing?
Yes.
I mean, listen, these clients sit here on the other side of me, and I'll say, she'll say, well, I've had five husbands, and they've all been the same. I said, well, the only one that was sleeping in that bed beside them was you. And, you know, they say, huh? And I say, you know what? Too bad you're not a lesbian. And they'll say, oh, what a concept. But, you know, I say these things just to kind of, you know, like a woodsman will take his axe to fell the tree. Well, these are the things that I do to kind of knock a hole in the defense lines so I can get inside and rescue the child. You know, people used to talk about the inner child. Well, the inner child's the forgotten one, but the one that remembers God, and that's the route to the authentic self. So, but humor is unbelievable, particularly when you can laugh at yourself.
So how distracted are we between our temptations, whether it's alcohol and drugs, or our obsessions with food or sex? I mean, we're distracting ourselves all the time with different things that stop us from, you know, going within or accepting within or living within.
Okay, let me give you a few tips. Aren't you glad that I come loaded with tips?
Mm-hmm.
But one of them is turn off the television, quit reading the newspaper, quit being obsessive about everything that the internet says, keep a journal, meditate, take yoga. Pilates is not bad. Do as much walking as you can. And for God's sakes, shut up in meditation and give that. I tell people to play classical music because heavy metal and rap is here to tear the world apart. Puccini and Verdi will lift you to the heights of heaven. Mm-hmm. And get really quiet because, you know, in the book, you know, the part about Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that interesting?
I did.
I explained it. It's just how I refer to the God part of me because, you know, I talk about the white-haired God on the throne that I grew up with the Baptist. But when this person had a mind-to-mind conversation with me, and I think he's on the phone with you today, that really touched me at a very deep level, touched me enough that look where all those stages in that book that I wrote is exactly the steps I took to go from the un-Albert to the real Albert.
Yeah. And you know, it doesn't matter whether you hear it or see it or, in my case, would feel it. We all get our intuition or our connection in the way that's unique to us.
Very, very true. But, you know, the thing that I'm really trying to say to people, though, is that there are a lot of people who come up with these nonsensical things that are supposed to tell people the how-to of whatever. And the only reason that I say that they're sort of nonsense is that they all seem to be written trying to be, you know, something that either fits glamour or Cosmo or, you know? Mm-hmm. And I say, listen, you're not here for anybody but for yourself. And that's the whole thing that I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
If God is born within you, and I'm not saying that God is necessarily different from person to person, because I also believe that there's a macrocosmic God that is kind of on a telepathic communication to the microcosmic God.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, to me, when you can, and I know that you're big into it, and I live my life by it, but I feel that people have got to begin to shut out the world and be who they are. Now, believe you me, you know, the Bible even says, and believe you me, I don't have to be in a pulpit and be a preacher to honor the Bible, because I think the Bible is the greatest book ever written, beside all the Kabbalah books. But I find that that it's very interesting, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace, God. And so I think that it's interesting. I love to go to movies. I just saw The Answer Man. Everybody, I think they've changed the name of it to Arlen Farber. But it's about a man who wrote Me and God, and he's a reprobate. And it's the greatest movie. But I had a lot of fun laughing. Sometimes I'll go and I'll cry because I think tears wash away a lot of obstacles and dams to our emotions to express who we really are. But you've got to really somehow not be so captured by everything the world says you ought to be in or real or whatever.
Right. Well, we haven't talked about karma at all yet, so let's talk about that a bit.
What is that?
We haven't talked about karma at all yet, so let's talk about karma.
Okay, that's another one of those, who is God? Karma, I'll give it the southern boy, hillbilly version. I think it's that we come in and we go out, we come in and go out, because the attachment to the egocentric behavior, whether it's sex and drugs, and you know, some people eat too much. I mean, I know I've been in OA before, and people say they eat a whole pie. I'm thinking, God, where'd she come from? But there are a lot of things that we do, and we drag them in. And you know that thing, the family is the karmic mirror?
I like that.
That's where you know what your karma is. Mama, daddy, siblings, socioeconomics, church or no church, God or no God, all that is your karma. You know, the greatest sin is self-righteousness.
Hmm.
I mean, I used to think I had the most self-righteous mother in the world until I had to look in that mirror and I was seeing myself.
Hmm.
So karma is where we've done a lot of bad things contrary to who we really are to a lot of people. And we come back, and the law of attraction says we must meet them, greet them, be beaten up by them or beat them up. But our whole end game in life is to work off as much karma as we can. And I'll tell you how you do that. Quit repeating the behavior and make amends. You know, in my program, the Sedona Intensive, people have to write rage letters on one night, and the next night they have to seek forgiveness from the very people they've raged at. And so, you know, there's a stage in there. Forgiveness is the path to clarity, and I think we call it now forget, forgive, and
mm-hmm.
forgive and forget-me-nots.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the old expression used to be forgive and forget. Well, no, I turned it and said forget-me-nots because the people that you had to seek forgiveness from, you'll never forget them because they become a part on your path to authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
But karma is strictly all the yous you've ever been that wasn't you, and you keep coming in and going out, coming in and going out. You have to keep repeating these things until you learn your lesson.
So I think a really big thing that you talk about, and you mentioned it briefly, is that, you know, each one of our family members, you know, the ones that, you know, push all of our buttons and the ones where we go, oh, I never want to grow up and be like that person. And you know, 20 years later, you find yourself saying the same thing to, you know, your child or to your spouse or, you know, all of those things. And, you know, I think it's empowering for you to say it again, but for people to really get that, you know, what you're saying is that, you know, each one of these people that you chose to come in with to play, you know, and push those buttons, because those are the contracts that you came in with when you, you know, came back into this life, you know, that's what they are. Like they.
But Laurie, I've got a better one than that.
Please.
What about that woman that was here recently and she said, Albert, I've never been like this in my life. I've got the stepmother and whatever. And sometimes I'm able to call up the Akashic Record and I'll say, in 1729 in Austria, you were an imperious woman and you treated a child as your stepmother has treated you. So it's payback time. Karma says you must feel what it feels like to have been inflicted upon in another life. You must experience every emotion, every feeling, every single thing. And until you do, you will never be able to be a part of the hierarchy of higher resonance and vibration that sends the telepathic communication for those of us in reform school to be able to turn our backs on our dark side by embracing it and becoming who we really are.
Hmm.
You see, most people, I hope you really got that, and I hope your listeners hear it, because there's so many self-righteous people out there that say, I'm not like my brother, I'm not like whatever. And I say, you have to be, because he's in your life or she's in your life.
Yeah.
Don't you find that interesting?
I do. I think it's...
That you don't have that behavior, but sometimes you did, and sometimes karma skips a generation. The Jews are brilliant. I can tell you, the Jews are so brilliant that I have a mezuzah on my door. because I'm really a big old Jew. But I'll tell you what the Jews say. When you are being, the soul comes into the body and the womb of the mother, they tap you on the nose and the angel of forgetfulness passes over, and you have to come back and you have to remember and you have to find and seek by the other book that I wrote. I've written several in 2003, Signs and Wonders. And they're re-releasing that book because they feel that it really is as relevant now that people can discover how to know who they really are. The Signs and Wonders, how when you're clear, God reveals himself. So.
Lovely. Well, let's see. All you need is love.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't forget that one because, you know, I talk about never feeling loved. I didn't like either my parents and to dad. I loved them. They were high masters in my life. But, you know, I found it through the people that I mentioned. I mentioned several, including Scott Carney, my business partner, who is the most incredible human I've ever met. And he's getting married in October. And he says, for God's sake, my sake, and her sake, don't always think that I'm flawless, and my bride-to-be is the one that will be at fault. And I do love him, and I do know he's not perfect, but he was my son in a former life. Do you know, when I was 25, I was told by two people, the only two real, I think, like Superman, could see through steel intuitives that I've ever met. And they both said the same thing. Between 59 and 60, 58 and 59, I think, you will meet someone that was your son in a former life. Wow. You will know him upon his re-entering your life, and you owe him everything. So treat him like the son and bring him into a world, and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I was having lunch almost 13 years ago, and there he was, and the voice said, that's him, and I took him into the program, you know, the 12-step program, and now he's my business partner, and he's the heir to anything I have when I die. But, I mean, it's kind of interesting because karma is unbelievable, but love is kind of the antidote to all the karma you have to go through and whatever. Because love, and it's not sexual, it can be, but it is totally and complete reunification with souls that you've known or want to know who represent the urgings of the soul to blend and bond and to commune with another soul.
You know, you've mentioned it a little bit about the 12-step program. How important is that? I mean, obviously, it was incredibly important as an alcoholic, and I think a lot of people think that, you know, that's all that's important, too, and I know that that's...
No, about 350 or more programs to use the 12-step consciousness. You know what I'll tell you? I'm really sorry for people that have never been alcoholic because it's absolutely the greatest place to... greatest common denominator, greatest leveler. Talks about the God of your own understanding. You work some steps, as I've given you some stages. And I like to think that God created the Sedona Intensive through me and my support staff because not everybody is going to go to AA, even if they need it. But sometimes people have other things. There are more sex addicts with pornography on the Internet. There's more overspending, overeating, some people over-traveling. There's some people who can't get off the golf course, or there's some people who can't stop working. There are a lot of different compulsions and addictions. So in my case, it happened to have been alcohol. And thank God for the Sedona Intensive, because you can come here and really get the stages and the steps and be free.
Well, Albert, it has been a great pleasure and honor. I totally enjoyed this hour. It's gone by way too quickly. I would absolutely love to have you come back and do another
Anytime,
show.
Anytime. You just call Linda or Scott. But I've loved this, too. And I want to thank you for the privilege of coming on, and thank you for reading the book. It really made the hour very, very special to me.
Well, thank you. Again, great pleasure, and I will have you back, so be expecting it.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.